All right, we're going to turn it over to Michael Olson, who is a digital archivist at Stanford University and who showed me the first Fred that I ever saw.
Good afternoon, everybody. I would first off like to thank a few people that are in this room who have actually been a big help for us setting up our forensics lab at Stanford. There's Jeremy John and Susan, who's sitting up here, the Emory folks, and there's more of you out there in the audience. We couldn't do it without some input and help and guidance from our peers. And finally, I just wanted to mention that there's a couple colleagues at Stanford that couldn't be here today.
It might be yourself.
I think it's my iPad. a couple colleagues at Stanford that couldn't be here today that deserve some credit: Peter Channer, digital archivist, and Glenn Edwards, who's the head of manuscripts. And finally, before I move on, I just wanted to point out that this is actually one of the archives we're working on. This is Stephen Jay Gould's data tapes and his punch cards. I don't have much time, so I'm going to really gloss over a lot in this talk in 10 minutes, just hopefully that I can bring up some points that we can talk about later or have more focused discussion on later. I'm first going to talk a little bit about the Born Digital Collections we have at Stanford, a little bit about the digital forensics lab that we built out, what sort of equipment we're using. And then we're going to talk a little bit about one of the ongoing efforts we're trying to make, which is evaluating forensic software that we use in our lab. And finally, raise some challenges that I hope, as I mentioned before, we can address in this meeting. We have over 18,000 pieces of born digital media in our collections that we know about. That number's growing every day as we go back and actually do better accounting than we have in the past. And it's an open question of what degree of risk this media is actually in. Some of it is probably better shape than others, but we just don't know at this point. And the collections that we're primarily focusing on right now, most of the ones that you see up on the slide are Ames collections for the Ames grant that Stanford is a partner in with the University of Virginia, University of Hull, and Yale. And I believe Bradley has put up the Ames talk as one of the lightning talks to address what Ames is all about. We have the Stephen Cavanetti collection, which is a large software collection of 5,000 to 6,000 titles. We have Robert Creeley's papers, Stephen Jay Gould, who I mentioned before, Peter Koch, who's a graphic artist, and the Xanadu Project collection. You'll notice that off on the right-hand side there that we were really thinking ahead when we selected these collections. We thought that there might be some important differences, the things that we might learn by choosing a literary figure's papers versus a graphic artist versus a software collection. So there was a little bit of rationale behind that selection process. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about our digital forensics lab. Last August, we acquired two FREDs. FRED stands for Forensic Recovery and Evidence Device. One is a workstation that's affixed in one of our labs. The second is an actual laptop that hopefully we'll be able to take out on the road for remote acquisitions. We've already had some interest from faculty that are getting retired or going emeritus for actually collecting some of their files. So I think that it's going to be a big benefit to do that. If you've received if you've actually purchased a workstation recently, you'll notice that there's no floppy drives in them. There's no floppy disk controllers actually on those machines anymore. So as a result, we've had to kind of be a little bit creative and purchase cat weasels, which are really cool sounding. Essentially what those are PCI cards that have floppy disk controller chips on them. Our experience with them, it hasn't been perfect, but it's we have been able to use them for some disk imaging, so it has been useful. Finally, we have a growing collection of hardware, legacy drives, 3.5-inch drives, 5.25-inch drives. The one thing that may not be apparent when you look at them is there actually are some significant differences between the drives, very significant differences. So if you're going to be doing this, you need to acquire lots of legacy equipment. We've been fortunate that Stephen Cavernetti actually collected everything and had garages full of this sort of stuff. So we've been able to call some of the hardware from our collections. We've also used eBay as well in a few cases. Finally, we have a copy stand and a digital SLR that's tethered to the workstation, and that's so the actual digital archivist, Peter Chan, can do the actually take a digital photograph of the media at the same time that he's actually doing forensic imaging. And an assortment of light blockers, of course. And there it is. It doesn't really... It's impressive looking, but there's really not a heck of a lot to it, to be quite honest. There's not enough drive base, which is probably our main concern at this point. We only have three, and Peter is constantly in a state of swapping out different types of equipment, which is not ideal. But it serves the purpose. I thought this would be interesting. We've actually imaged all of the Gould collection, which is about 139 pieces of media. And most of this is 5.25 and 3.5-inch diskettes. And I'm not sure this is significantly relevant, but I thought it was interesting anyways that that we have almost 4% of it we haven't been able to get a correct image off of. We're not quite sure why. That's why I think it's great creating a community here that you can kind of bounce these ideas off of. And then there's 2.3% that are, we think it's a hardware incompatibility issue. We're having trouble with 5.25-inch disks that are single side, high density. But we think we'll be able to solve that with a little bit of work. Finally, we've been testing out a lot of different software in the labs. We're using FDK Imager, Forensic Toolkit, FDK. We're on the new version, which is version 3. NCASE, I've been doing training for. We're using Droid for file signature analysis. We're just starting to use SleuthKit to see what it can do for us, which is open source, which has its benefits. And there's lots more software, far too many to get into in the 10 minutes I've got. And the criteria we're kind of using, we're sort of building out a matrix that we can use to begin to kind of do some sort of assessment of what tools we think would work for us. And hopefully that information will be a benefit to the community. Obviously, the skills and training that's required to use the software, they're not all created equal. Some of them are a little bit more user-friendly than others. Some of them are command line. That's important to note. Cost, obviously, whether they're open source or commercial. We're thinking of developing workflows that we use in all of our labs, not just the forensics lab. And if we can have open source where we can actually have the code and modify it, there might be benefits for that. So that's something to consider. The feature set, supported file formats, and metadata outputs is another thing we're looking at. Sustainability for lab tasks. For some things, you just don't need the most fancy thing. I guess. Like, for example, if you're just doing forensic imaging, you probably don't need to go out and spend thousands and thousands of dollars. But that evaluation is still out there. And I'm not sure if you can actually see this. This is kind of a matrix that Peter and I have been working on to sort of do some evaluation of some of the different software out there. It's always a work in progress. And I have to rein in Peter because he's always finding new things out on the internet. I thought this might be interesting to show. It's probably really difficult to see, but this is FDK showing an email file from Robert Creeley, Robert Creeley's collection. It's just interesting to be able to kind of see the interface to get a sense of what it is a digital archivist needs to learn to use. Preliminary findings are, I really don't want to give recommendations at this meeting just because we haven't looked at everything yet. I've got some ideas in the back of my head, but I really need to you really need to look at some of the open source software packages that are out there. Next is one example. There's a lot more. But one thing we can say at this point is that of all of these particular pieces of software, they really do require specialized training. And more importantly, a foundational understanding of the knowledge of how these disks and file systems really work underneath. The tool is can do it all for you, but if you don't understand really what it's doing, it's probably not of much benefit. And then, of course, you know, the tool that you probably use really depends on the collection, what your purposes are for that. If you're just looking to create a disk image, it's probably a different tool than if you wanted to do some really in-depth analysis. And finally, I just wanted to throw out some of the challenges, or at least things that we're thinking about, in the hopes that we can kind of create some conversation around these points. One is the one of hardware obsolescence. The more we do in our digital forensics lab, the more we realize that there's a need for, not one institution can do it all. There really is a need to do some sort of specialization here. And I think that's probably going to be based on the collections that different institutions have. We've already been doing some work, for example, with we do some data tapes in-house, but we have been relying on the software curator at the Computer History Museum, just because their expertise in that area is so much greater than ours. And I think we really need to think about building these communities of expertise in different areas with different formats. The next one would be validation of forensic images. We've run into this with floppies, and that is, you know, we're having the software tell us that we're getting the correct image, but do we really know that that is the case? And I'm a little skeptical at this point. And I really want to be able to tap into some other experts in the field to really determine whether we're getting is really what we're getting. And once again, this is where software engineers really come in handy, or folks like the software curator at the Computer History Museum and other folks out in the field. The next would be prioritization and increasing throughput. This is really important. What I showed you is a boutique at this point, and unfortunately that's not going to scale. We need to essentially use the lab that we've built out to really begin to develop processes and equipment that can really scale on a significant way. And of course, even if we do scale it, we're still going to have to make some selection prioritization up front. Another really challenging issue is methods for describing more digital collections. This is one thing that we've really struggled with. The software that's out there for describing traditional archival materials is good for that. Archivist Toolkit is an example. But it really doesn't map all that well to describing more digital collections, at least in our experience. The methodologies are the same, but the software just really kind of, it's difficult to really begin to categorize and break things down when you're dealing with a single disk app that literally has thousands of files on it, how you describe that. And finally, preservation packages. I know there's been a little bit of talk about that, but I know that there's, you know, currently we're preserving .dd. I know that Simpson Garfinkel has created AFF. I think that's something we should look into as a community. It has a metadata wrapper up front. These are things that I think that we need to address and talk about what we're actually preserving as in our long-term digital repository. And finally, I thought I'd end with something really cool. This is actually a virtual machine running one of Stephen Jay Gould's epilogues from one of his books. And if anybody is familiar with DOS and WordPerfect, you probably could get excited about this, at least I am. Most people won't, but a few of us would. Because this is probably how it really looked to him when he was actually working on his writings. Thank you.